Hey, everybody. Welcome to Priorcaster. This is Bob. I caught Mike turned around there. Did you see that, everybody?
Petting my cat.
Oh, I'm petting the cat. Oh, there you go.
Walked in front of the computer.
Yeah, that's fine. Just let him go. So, how long have I known of you, at least? I don't really know you because we've never met personally, but I think I've known of you, what, now for
I think it's been
15 years?
Somewhere around there. I got involved in the Overnight Scape Underground. It's run by Frank, Nora, around 2011. And that was when you were doing morning commute.
Right, good old morning commute. Yeah, hey, everybody.
Yeah, and that was like one of those early shows that I heard on that network that was like, okay, yeah, this is what I wanted. This is more in line with what I think podcasting is supposed to be versus sort of what it was becoming at the time, which was basically just like National Public Radio.
streaming. What is it now, Mike? What is it?
I have no idea. I don't know. It definitely seems like podcasting has become, and I listen to like a lot of podcasting, and I think it's fine. And it's like, I used to be really judgmental about and irritated about what podcasting had become because, and we'll get into it, I suppose, but
yeah, no, jump right in.
Yeah. 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 It seemed like, podcasting was this kind of great wave of the future in like 2004. And, for about, I don't know. I mean, you could probably speak to it better than I could, but I got like an iPod, like a video iPod in 2005, really just to sort of listen to podcasts, but also people were doing like video podcasts as well. Mm-hmm. There was like Ricky Gervais, was kind of the big one. And
yeah, early on,
I absolutely loved it. And then I think there was just this initial, like everybody really got on the bandwagon. Everybody had a podcast, and then it just like suddenly fizzled out. It seemed like for several years.
Yeah.
And then I started my show in the middle of that fizzling out. Right. So sort of like just an atomic bomb had been dropped on the landscape. I don't follow anything. And I don't follow, like, I don't understand. I didn't know that at the time. I started it thinking that it was a good idea to start a podcast because, like, it's still a thing, but
yeah.
Nobody was really listening to it. And then I think what happened.
And that was the Midnight Citizen, right?
That's the show. Yeah. So I started it in like my first show was January 2nd, 2010. And then it was like, it seemed like about a year later or so, that show Serial, I think that was when Serial came out. Yeah. It may have been a little bit later than that, but Serial was essentially produced by, the same producers as This American Life on NPR. And so the idea was like, this would be a good NPR show, but NPR can't put it on the air. So let's just put it on a podcast. And then everything after that became all about just true crime, or it became about like, that kind of NPR style, right?
Yeah.
And it's, that seems to have persisted to this day, where all the big podcasts sort of have that general, public radio flavor of, storytelking and, I think, and obviously it's a lot more diverse than that, right? But back in like 2011 or so, when they started to do that, I was really judgmental of that. I was really irritated by that because it didn't seem to be it's, and I hate to use the term like punk rock, I don't mean to do that, but it seemed to have this like, podcasting seemed to have this pirate radio edge in like the early days, where it did really just seem incredibly democratic, like anybody could have a show and anybody could kind of do their own thing and it could be whatever. And then it when Serial came out, and then of course What the Fuck with Marc Maron became a big show, which just ended a couple weeks ago. Everybody had to do an interview show, and so it all became about interviews, and it all became about true crime and documentary, like radio documentary, and it just the landscape became just incredibly homogenized, And it just, I was like really irritated by it. So it was like a really big revelation when I kind of found out about Frank's show, The Overnight Scape. And then I found out about The Overnight Scape Underground through like him and PQ River at the time were sort of running it. And then I just like sent Frank an email thinking that he would be a great gatekeeper. And I sort of sent him my show. And I was like, listen, I don't think this is I don't know if this show is right for you. And I really thought that there was like an audition process I was going through with Frank, really on pins and needles waiting for his email. And he just got back immediately. Like I said, like I post a show once a week. I'm really consistent. I'll be a really good contribution. I'll work super, super hard for your network. And I was like, really on pins and needles about it. And he's like, yeah, sure. Okay. Here's the password. Fine.
Yeah. Frank is not overly formal.
No, I know. I think in like all of the years, I think he's only turned down one show just because it didn't really sort of have like you know, it was a bit more of like a raunchier show for the right. In terms of, you know,
yeah, just, you don't have to be PG, but you know,
you need to be somewhat accepting of you know,
yeah, fit somewhere, you know, in the norms of society a little bit.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, and I think like, it's been a lot of fun over the years to just like connect with everybody. Obviously it's been like a lot more, like Frank does a show every, you know, twice a week, and he's been doing that for years. And, over the years, the people who have contributed to the Overnight Scape Underground, it's sort of ebbed and flowed quite a lot, but it's led to like a lot of great, you know, friendships that I have, like Chad Bowers, who you've had on this particular show in the past. He now lives in my town, and we get together. I was just talking to him yesterday on the phone, and you know, so it's led to some pretty cool things, some pretty cool relationships, and all that. So
I've actually met Chad in person.
Yeah.
And he was in St. Louis, and we went out to get some food. I've met Frank in New York City. I was in New York City.
Yeah, no, I met him too. I did the whole Frank Edward Nora.
You go see Frank when you know. I met Manny the Mailman. Yeah. He was in St. Louis, and I met up with him and we had lunch.
Yeah.
So yeah, eventually I will meet up with you, Mike. It just takes a little. Either got to come to St. Louis or. Yeah. I have to go to wherever you're at, and so far that's not happened yet.
I think I'd much rather come to St. Louis. I don't know what.
I don't know, maybe.
I mean, you know, Birmingham is it's a kind of a cool town, but you know, but yeah, I've never been to St. Louis before, but we do live in the same time zone, so it's kind
right.
Of
like, yeah, that's true. but so the Midnight Citizen kind of started out all this. I love your, you know, your introduction on Unsug, because it all was very loose, and I think you're right. I think so. I always tell people, and I don't know that I've heard this elsewhere, but I don't go looking for it, so maybe it's been said and I'm just repeating something, but you know, we're in the third wave of podcasting. So first wave was 2004 when it was invented, second wave was 2011. And then the third wave was 2020, right? Because those are that's the ebb and flow. And now 2020 has, the trajectory has gone up.
Yeah.
And it hasn't come down yet. And to me, the weird thing about all of it is, you know, we used to have, for media, we used to have these really siloed, defined things, right? So there's radio, right? There was, you know, records or cassettes or CDs and all that stuff, right? Kind of recorded media. Then there was television, and then it had its recorded media, and there was movies, and then it had its recorded media. So all of them had, you know, kind of a silo. Now a little blurry with, you know, television and movies in the like DVD VHS phase, right? But now podcasting is, everything's a blur. Everything is radio, movie, television all together.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, there's not really any differentiation, because people say podcast. And now I think if you're just coming into it now, you automatically think there's already video on it.
Right.
And that was not the original, goal, because at the time, and no one even thinks about this in these days, you couldn't do video.
Right.
It was not possible. You could barely do the audio.
Yeah. And even like with the original, like, as I was saying, the Ricky Gervais show, I mean, they weren't, I don't know if they recorded their show. I think they may have, and they put it on like the BBC or Sky or whatever, over in England. They did. But, when you would actually watch it on your video iPod, even back then, it was like animations and right. like sketches and all that. That was kind of the idea. But, it is funny because like I started doing, that was kind of always the goal of my show, is to actually do like a video, a video component. But, when I first started out, it was really not possible for me to do that. I think I may have been able to, because there were sites, like I think you mentioned, like Live 365. I think you could do live video and audio on that. And there was like Live Stream or something. I'm trying to remember what that was, but now with like YouTube and Spotify and everything, like they 100% encourage you to do like a video component. And I always kind of liked that because, I sort of had this idea, like when I was in middle school, like I'm grew up in the 90s, and Howard Stern, I don't believe was ever carried in my market. And even if he was, I wouldn't have been able to listen to him. It's like my mom would drive me to school every day, and she would listen to like Focus on the Family, like Christian radio. And but at night though, they would air highlights of it on E, and it would all be like a video component. It's like, this is what, this is what the show looked like and all that. That always kind of stuck with me a little bit. So I did like the idea of being able to actually, have video as an audio component. But the weird thing is that I absolutely just like love the audio, really. It's one of those things where like my last show, I didn't do any video. I did just audio only. Mm-hmm. And that is so much better because it's just such a more, I don't want to say like intimate, or anything like that, but it does like kind of force your, like when you're forcing everything through like one sense, it's just so much, more, measured in the way that you kind of respond to it. And it's just a much like, I think like more, why not intimate to experience like a radio show. So,
yeah, no, I think so. And I still put everything out separately, audio and video. Mm-hmm. Maybe just because that's, the video is the new part. But the funny thing is, so as a kid, and I know a little bit of your backstory just from listening to you over the years and so forth, but, did you have aspirations whenever you were younger to be like on the radio or to create things? I know you had aspirations to do late night horror stuff.
You
have a really good, one that you did actually that you created, which was fun. I've seen where you were the horror host.
So, that whole thing was like, I got into, I think like my story is very much like, like I've heard some of the previous episodes, and I did hear your interview with Frank and, and you and Frank both, and this is the first episode I think you did of the show. We're talking about Gene Shepard. And so like as a kid, absolutely loving A Christmas Story, and I would get irritated that like, that's all of Gene Shepard that I had. And you had a couple of like, you had like a couple of other movies that Gene Shepard were made from his works, like Ollie Hot Noodles, Haven of Bliss. But I absolutely loved just the idea of like the single guy recounting his childhood, because just I was like, just as a kid, it sort of really spoke to me. And so I was frustrated always that you couldn't get any more Gene Shepard stuff. And when I found out like in high school that he had been on the radio for years, suddenly my mission became about finding Gene Shepard stuff. And And I, that wouldn't happen for years. Like in college, I finally, like the internet sort of came alive with Gene Shepard archive. And, yeah, like that was sort of the idea, is that even with Gene Shepard, and kind of mixed that in with like, yeah, late night horror hosting, which had always been, you know, going back to the way early days of television, that had always been a standard of television was the late night horror host. Mm-hmm. There was something about that, that sort of like the boss is left for the day. And now you got this like man putting on like fangs, you know? But obviously I didn't really get to experience any of that. Like, I think that was more of, I mean, that was all over the place, and they had horror host here in Birmingham. That was like in the '50s and the '60s, but like in the '90s though, you had obviously Joe Bob Briggs on Monster Vision, and you had like Elvira, and even Gilbert Godfrey would do it. And they would host more of like the camp, you know, sex flicks.
Right.
But
USA up all night.
Yeah. There you go. So I'm glad you did it, because I didn't want to do my presentation. But like, you know, Joe Bob Briggs was obviously like a big inspiration. And he was also what you would call like, I guess, a humorist raconteur, in the same vein as Gene Shepard. But he would be more adopted to like the South, which is where I'm from. So I just had this like real obsession with just like kind of like late night. The boss has left. Now you get to do whatever you want to with the television studio or the radio studio. And so, yeah, like when my friends and I got together in college, of course, is like people do in college, they meet each other over their like interests. And you know, we got together and we just sort of like wanted to do a late night horror show like that. So we kind of came up with this thing, and we did it from like 2006 to, you know, the last one was whatever, 2016. But, you know, one of my friends, you know, of course, he moved out to Los Angeles, and it was a lot of fun to do, but it became very frustrating in the fact that, like, you know, you couldn't do it with him gone. So, and I got very frustrated with the idea of like, you know, I want to create this stuff, but I have to have other people to do it. And so that was sort of falling back on the original Gene Shepard formula of just like, just be at a microphone, just like by yourself. You don't have to like worry about anybody else. You don't have to coordinate schedules. You don't have to like, you know, have tense creative meetings with anybody else, and you know, strained friendships and things like that. So I started up the Midnight Citizen just as like a way to do that, as to sort of like see if I could just, you know, take podcasting, which again, keep in mind, in 2010, I didn't realize that nobody really listened to podcasts at the time. It wasn't important though. It wasn't important. It was just sort of to do the thing and just to kind of like, you know, have this fun time. And yeah, like, even though like every time my friend Vince would come back from LA, we would do a new episode of Creepfest. You know, he would go back, but you know, still do the show. And yeah, the thing you're referring to, the one horror hosting show that I did just by myself, that was in 2010, because I was sort of like, can I continue to do the horror hosting show just by myself? And it turned out it wasn't fun. It's like I had my friends helping me out, my like girlfriend, who's like now my wife at the time, she was helping me out with it, but it just wasn't the same. And it's like, I just kind of want to just be responsible for this myself, you know, rather than having other people sort of be involved with it. And it's just like so versatile what you can kind of do with like a radio type show, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. But you didn't ever want to be on the radio when you were younger, or was that an interest? I mean, other than Howard Stern, but you didn't get to listen to Howard Stern. So.
No, I didn't. Howard Stern is kind of like this idea, and I've never honestly quite liked Howard Stern that much, just because I always felt like everything great about him had happened before I even knew about him, really. So it wasn't even that, but it was, you know, like I did have this idea, like when I was in college, I did do college radio, like a lot of people do. And, you know, college radio was not at all like when I, in 2005 or six, when I was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, you know, at the university, college radio was not at all like what I wanted it to be. However, I did get to go in there and I got my own overnight spot, which I thought was awesome. I got my own overnight spot They just sort of gave me the keys to the place. And like just when I walked in there, and I sort of had this moment where I was like, is it this easy to just do what you want to do? I walked in there with the very idea of being like, you know, and I found out very quickly that it kind of was like, if you walk in to an all volunteer student run radio station and you tell them that you want to work on the microphone from 2 o'clock in the morning to six, nobody's going to stop you because they're college students. They don't want to do that, you know?
Right. They want to be out and about, right?
Exactly. So. That's precisely what I wanted to do. So I got to do that, which was really cool. I got this, my own overnight spot. I did it for about 6 months. And what ended up happening there, I'll tell you at the very beginning, was nobody really trained me on how any of the equipment worked. They kind of have, they gave me a view how like, I knew how to like fade the mic up and all that, but I didn't really understand their digital cart system, whatever they had at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I went in there, there were all these like tracks you were supposed to play. And then like every block or whatever, you could play your own song. And so I didn't really understand how to cue up new music. So I just played my own music like all the time. And then I would like stop the music and I would actually do like 20-minute monologues, and it didn't matter because it's like a, what, it's like a 20-watt radio station, nobody's listening, and it's like Saturday night, it's like game day in Alabama, which is the biggest football school in the South, so nobody, right, nobody's listening in 2005 to college radio on game day. And for a while I got away with it and it was really cool and I sort of liked it. I would sort of go on just these long monologues. And I have no idea, like, I mean, obviously they weren't recorded or anything like that, but I have no idea what I'm talking, what I talked about. I'm sure that they were, I'm sure that they were FCC compliant, but I'm sure that they were just the ravings of a lunatic. They were like probably Unabomber light. And, I got away with it for a while. And then like one night about like 4 o'clock in the morning or so, the, you know, station manager comes in, who again is a student, and he's like this I don't know, he's like from some vague like Eastern European country, and comes in and just sort of, I see him standing behind the glass and he's just kind of shaking his head and he's really, really obviously very pissed at me.
Oh no.
Yeah. So he had just, you know, happened to be listening, I guess, just to see what that weird volunteer that he hired like 3 months ago and hasn't seen. And he, yeah, got in his car and he drove to the studio and he said, like, you know, you got to play, you know, what's on the thing. And I said, I don't know how this stuff works. I'm sorry. So
nobody trained me. Come on.
Yeah, I know. And it was sort of like, you know, just kind of, they set me up to do that, I guess. But, you know, yeah.
And then it got boring after that.
Yeah. Well, it was that, but no, I think I kept on doing the same thing. I don't know. I really don't remember how the whole thing ended. I think it ended because like, just like all the other people, I also didn't want to be up at a volunteer doing a volunteer work at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, it wasn't really leading to anything. I got my experience and I sort of got out, you know, but, yeah. I don't know. It's like, what was I in 2005, like 21, 22? I don't know. I mean, it was just, you know, I think if I had more people around me, if I had had more of a community in the radio station that I sort of wish that I had had, it would have actually led to something, or it would have been more of an engaging experience. But, you know, there is something that I learned in that whole experience about the idea of like, at the end of the day, when the boss has left and you get the radio station to yourself, that you are alone. And it is at the end of the day, a very lonely experience. And you really don't get any kind of satisfaction from it after the initial novelty's worn off. And if nobody's calling in and you don't have a producer there who's working with you, it just is like, what am I doing right now?
that's interesting. I never really thought about it like that. I did the sad thing to me is college radio is essentially gone now because of podcasting.
Yeah.
The college radio station I worked at is no more. They shut it all down because there just wasn't the interest that there was in previous, you know, years.
Only irrelevant to students. Like they you know, I teach freshmen, you know, college freshmen, how to write. You know, mm-hmm. an adjunct instructor, and was talking to them today about, or I think it was like Tuesday, about, you know, National Public Radio, you know, like mm-hmm. government funded radio, and showed them the logo, told them what it stood for. They had no idea what I was talking about. And now, to be, you know, fair, kids don't, have never listened to National Public Radio, and they don't really know what it is. I don't think I knew what NPR was until I was in college, but they looked at me like I was absolutely insane just by saying the word radio. Like they have like absolutely no connection at all to anything terrestrial or satellite. Everything that they take in is streaming. It's there for their convenience whenever they want it. Mm-hmm. They have absolutely really, they seem to have, and I've been doing this for a while now, you know, I've been teaching for 8 years. So I think I have like pretty good historical data to support this, even though it's anecdotal. Kids like absolutely have, and I'm going to say kids who are born maybe after 2005, but it may even be earlier than that, really have like no concept whatsoever of like immediacy, of just, you know, taking like being of communal experiences in terms of like, you know, broadcasting. And that's an incredibly, I don't know. I could say it's tragic. I could say that, but it's also maybe, you know, that's just sort of how history moves. You know, history doesn't really care about like what is good for us. You know, we sort of tell it where to go. And it's like, if the kids sort of feel that like on demand is, you know, like what they like, then that's where everything's going to be moving. So,
yeah,
you know, but you sort of get the images, right, of like the fireside chats of like how everybody was kind of gathered around the radio, you know, listening to like, you know, one thing in the country, or, you know, watching, you know, like one television show, and just having like altogether monoculture. And it's gone now. And it fades out even more every single year, you know?
Yeah. I wonder what, you know, to me, the weird thing is that you don't have these touchstones, you know, for a time. Right. So, you know, whenever I was younger, than the MASH finale was a huge, huge, huge thing. Right. Everybody watched the MASH finale.
Right.
And we've gotten to the point now where the only thing that is like that is sports.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
And that's it. I mean, you don't even have your Seinfeld finale was big, but it wasn't as big as the MASH finale, right? Yeah. So now we're relegated to, you know, World Series, Stanley Cup, and Super Bowl,
right?
And yeah, those are the only things it seems like that at this point garner. And the funny thing was, they were on broadcast until what, 2 years ago, and now they're streaming. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So at this point, we've made the transition. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, there still is radio and television, but they are relegated.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are way relegated at this point.
Yeah.
And even movies. COVID, you know, put the stake in movies.
Yeah, I can't even tell you how depressing it is to talk to kids. You have a child, you know.
How old? I got a couple kids, but yeah,
How old?
They're both in their 20s now, early 20s. Yeah, so.
I mean, you know what it's like. I mean, you know, talk to them.
Yeah, but well, I think there's. All right, how will I say this without sounding, you know, jerky or something? my kids have me as a parent.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And it comes,
and so,
nurturing, and it comes down to good fatherhood.
Right? But I'm just saying, they have exposure, right? Yeah. Because this was something that I grew up with, and so they have exposure. And the other thing is, they have a father who was doing this new media before they were born.
Right. Yeah.
And they didn't really know about it when they were little, but they obviously knew about it as they got older, because it was obvious that at least once a week Dad goes and locks himself and talks to somebody.
No.
And that goes out on the internet. Yeah. And you know, now it's public knowledge. I never, you know, would tell them about it when I was doing it. I would, it, they just figured it out. It's, you know, their kids figure everything out. Yes. So, but the funny thing is that they have a little bit more, schema for these things than most people.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, you know, I've been involved in this kind of stuff for a really long time, and, you know, it comes out whether you want it to or not. It's part of your, becomes part of your personality to talk about these things. And so, yeah. So, but I think that, to me though, I just wonder, I mean, we do have big shows and so forth. You talked about Marin and everything, and Ricky Gervais and so forth, but the churning is faster, right? They churn way faster than the top shows on television and radio did during their day.
Yeah.
And so it's this constant churning. And so it's almost like whatever peak you get in the window, that's going to be the big thing for you.
Yes.
But it changes so fast that then everybody's got a different thing.
Yeah.
And so unfortunately, to me at least, what I see is sports and tragedy. Those are the only two things anyone remembers.
Right, and barely tragedy. I mean, people Super Bowl this year, they can't tell you what earthquake happened and what country that we were all obsessed with, you know, 3 days ago. I mean, yeah. Talking to, again, students this week, and they were barely aware of the fact that the whole Israel-Palestine thing seems to be for now wrapped. And, you know, this thing that sort of obsessed or took a lot of our attention on the world stage over the past few years. Mm-hmm. And I was barely even really aware of that, you know? I mean, because it's, you know, you have busy lives, and when you sort of like, you know, are not doing work, you kind of want to be entertained. Entertain with whatever, as you said, like, you know, kind of, you know, sort of comes into your purview in that moment where you want to be entertained. You know, Google, I found it interesting. It's like, when, and maybe it's a setting I have, but, you know, I don't know, when you go to Google is no longer just like a blank page. You know, Google tells you the news of the day. It tells you stock, weather, all that stuff. So
coming Yahoo.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what it's becoming. That's one of the reasons why people liked, I think, Google back in the day, is because it was just like completely like starting you out with a blank slate of the internet. And, you know, and it's become absolutely impossible to keep a thought in your brain for more than a second. You know, if you're interested in one thing 3 hours from now, you can't remember what that thing is anymore. Listen, I can like go on and on, because I've been talking all week long with students about messaging and about like, you know, determining bias and things like that. I don't want to do that because, I can go on and be, and continue that sort of, conversation and dialogue. The simple thing is though, is that like, it is like the movement of history is just, I don't know where we're going from here. Because everything is so fractured. Nobody really seems to be able to like kind of think about the same thing at the same time as like three other people at once. So it's becoming increasingly difficult to communicate with each other. It really is. So
no shared experiences. So therefore you don't have any necessarily bonding at that point, then, I suppose.
Yeah, I know. And you know, the thing about podcasting is that, how can there be an audience when everybody is also a creator? And I think like that's one of the things that has really soured me on podcasting. I used to say I got soured on it because it became something I didn't want, but you know, I can't help that. I'm soured on it now because it's become this really easy thing that anybody can do. And it's now if I happen to tell people that I do a podcast, it's sort of kind of sometimes met with like an eye roll, which really bothers me. and I wish I didn't take it so personally, but I do, because whenever podcasting is brought up, it's usually qualified with the phrase like everybody has a podcast now.
Right. Yeah.
And all that. And you know, that's, I think also an issue because like when everybody sort of, you know, creates things, there's not really much left for people to, you know, actually sort of just, I don't know. Is this making sense at all? It's like, how can there be everybody's a creator?
No, it does make sense. And I think, you know, being a cranky old man, I'm like, what is it with all these people? You know what I mean? And always what got me, and this is one of those things, you know, so my kids grew up with all this. And so my daughter, when she was, it's probably been about 10 years ago or something, when she was a little younger, teenager-ish more, preteen, I guess. But anyway, some YouTube person came and did a live thing and she wanted to go. And I'm like, what in the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What is this about? I'm like, you know, and they were like this big, I can't remember who they were. They probably don't even do anything anymore. But, you know, I'm like,
it sort of used
what
to
is
be
going
like,
on.
It sort of used to be like DJs, you know, like, you know, what it's like, you're going to go pay money to see somebody twist some knobs. And that was used to be
that still thing. Is apparently.
It's like, but, yeah, it's true. But now, yeah, it's like, I'm going to go see my, you know, a YouTuber or somebody on TikTok. It's like, what are they going to do up there? It depends. That's a case by case basis. If it's like a comedian who's sort of making their living on TikTok and now they've got a stage show, then that's one thing that, you know, they do that. They do like, you know, stand up comedy or whatever. You know, yeah, I get genuinely confused. I got confused recently because, you know, this really big movie that I was really wanting to see, you know, came out called One Battle After Another. And, and I was looking forward to this movie for months. And this movie made by a director who usually makes very small art house movies has suddenly been given the keys to the kingdom to make like a $130 million movie. Big right. action IMAX movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, who I'm under the impression is one of the biggest movie stars in the world, and everybody kind of knows who he is and everything. And this movie is being marketed very, very heavily by Warner Brothers. You know, it's got like a $70 million advertising budget, and they're putting out Lego tie-in action figures. They're putting out a Fortnite tie-in game. They're putting it, they're advertising it during, you know, football games. They're really trying to make it like this big event, and I go see it and I really like it. And everybody I talked about the movie, everybody, looks at me like I'm crazy. Like, what are you talking? What is this movie again? It's like, nobody knows what it is. You know? Yeah. And I talk to my students, so I'm not at all surprised that they don't know what it is because they don't go to movies. You know, they're not that's a lot of work for them to right. go to, or to just even sit through a movie. They don't even watch movies anymore at home in their dorms or whatever because it's just too much attention. I mean, they've told me this. I'm not saying that. That's not a grumpy old man. They've told me that without me leading them. I can't believe they would say that without irony. But the funny thing is that the movie comes out and it opens okay, but it doesn't make its money back. It makes about right. a quarter of its budget back. So the studio, I think, starts freaking out. And the next week you start seeing DiCaprio again, remind like one of the biggest movie stars in the world going back 25 years now, all the way to Titanic, is suddenly doing TikTok interviews. You know, he never does interviews, right? But suddenly he's on TikTok being interviewed by influencers. Suddenly people know who he is.
Gotcha.
Who he is. That's what's so crazy about it is the fact that, like, you know, we used to have this like dominant culture where like these in ways, maybe it's a good thing. You know, you've got these like multi-billion dollar international corporations sort of telling us what we should pay attention to. But now we are telling them through our, you know, through our social media feeds, like, no, this is what we're interested in. And if you want other people to be interested in it, you have to play by our rules. You have to come to us and be interviewed, you know, on a vertical screen.
Unfortunately, though, yeah, the vertical screen, that's a whole other thing. But the but to me, though, yes, but no, because now all of the, you know, quote unquote new media is becoming dominated by the conglomerates again. And so,
of course, they see the value in that. Of course, they're taking it back. They don't want, you know, individual people to have that much control over something. That you're exactly right. Sorry.
And so we got to take our ball and go to make another court. And so that's the sad thing to me, is because, you know, this was supposed to be, you know, the democratization of media.
Right.
And now it again is becoming the conglomeratization of media. Right. And because they had all this, they had a war chest, and they just waltzed on over, and they're like, yeah. And this is what gets me crazy. So, and I don't, in my regular life, we'll put it that way, because I do have a regular job.
Yeah.
And I've kept it, and, you know, so forth.
Oh, that's good.
I don't go around talking about what I do for my hobby.
Yeah.
But in my regular job, I hear people go, literally, this is what drives me crazy a little bit, and it is crazy. A person of no note gets flown to Washington, D.C. to do a podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, what is wrong with the world? Number one, you don't need to fly to do this and spend all this money and so forth, but it is. And I mean, this is a person who's done nothing. I mean, they're literally just a cog in the machine.
Right.
And this is happening. And so this is what tells me that somebody, you know, companies, whatever, are throwing all this money, because guess what? That person from now on to forever would be like, I got, you know, flown to Washington, D.C., and they picked me up in a limousines or whatever, you know, and it becomes this whole thing. And so it's like, why? Because there is no way in the world ever that they recouped anything from this situation.
Yeah, I know. It depends on who it is. Like, they may not be a note to you, but they're probably a note to, like, you know.
Oh, I know who they are, and they are not a note to anyone. Okay. Maybe not even their own children.
Yeah,
I'll put it that way.
It is this weird thing, though. Like, you know, the thing about the time that we live in now is that you don't need to fly anywhere to do anything. And if, you know, the fact that you get flown somewhere to do something, that's usually just a part of marketing, so that they can have like a picture, like a B-roll of an airplane landing on a tarmac. And they can have, like, you know, a camera swooping in on like a guy in a suit opening a door for you and everything. Yeah.
It's all that's a junket. Yeah, that's what that is. That's a junket.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They're buying your favor. Now, buying their favor probably was probably wasn't even worth it, to be honest with you, knowing them. But anyway, buying their favor was probably the approach to it. But they bought the wrong person's favor. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
They're not going to do anything for them. But to me, I was like, okay, now we've gotten into, you know, that was because it was so close.
Right.
That was where I'm like, okay, we've gotten into everybody's slinging money. And right now, that's why everybody, oh, I can become a podcaster and become a millionaire.
Yeah.
I literally was talking to this poor kid, because I've just for fun, I do interviews with other people and so forth. And, you know, kind of a little hook I use is, I'm like, yeah, I've been doing this a while. And so then they talked about, you must be a millionaire from this. It's like, no. No, the, you know, people who are a millionaire from this were probably a millionaire before they did this.
Yeah. It's unbelievable that we actually could have people who think that you're going to get into podcasting and instantly be a celebrity. That always astonishes me. And maybe that's a way to actually, like, you know, get a little bit back toward that monoculture, is just, if, like, you know, there was some kind of a law that actually said, as a podcaster, you had to publish your earnings every what you make. Because that's I think a lot of people really do get into it thinking that their voice is like, and because they have no experience whatsoever, but their voice is just going to carry them and they're going to make something that's so incredibly, I don't even think that they're actually doing that. They don't get into it thinking that they're going to be really original. They're thinking that like this person did it, so I can too. They're just kind of copying and pasting what everybody else does. So that's the issue. It's like, why do you get into something that's fun and that's creative? Well, you get into it because you think you have like a unique angle on it. You think you can do something new with it. That's not the way that most people approach podcasting or YouTubing or being a TikTok influencer. They get into it just simply for like that kind of end game. And most of them, I like to think, fizzle out very, very quickly and just lose.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure.
First place. But
if everybody says we've got, you know, X hundreds of million people as users, right?
Yeah.
I think that there needs to be a defined bracket, right? Because if people are jumping on, getting a username and jumping off and then jumping back on in 6 months and getting a username, that's how you get that many people, because it's the same person.
Right.
Or it's just all these onesies, twosies that, you know, were drunk and said, let's get an account. And then the next thing you know, they never go back.
I know.
But let's turn this around before we finish up here and give me some stats on the Midnight Citizen. We're kind of poo-pooing this, but you do have a show.
Yeah. So like the show started in 2010 and it's now 2025 and I'm about to end it next week. Next week, we have the last episode and it's episode 300. So it'll be my 300th episode of the show. Now, if you're doing the math, that's not a show every week. And I listen to some podcasts that have only been on for like a year and they've done like 500 episodes or something like that. And, I don't know how that happens. I don't know what they consider an episode. I don't know what their network is. I don't know at all, but like, I'm just like an ordinary guy here in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, when I started the show, I was in school going for my education certification, wanting to be a teacher, just doing the show, my free time to sort of like just have some kind of a creative outlet. I've since starting the show, you know, I've, you know, become a teacher. I've worked a lot of other jobs. I'm currently, you know, I went back to grad school. I'm now like teaching college after teaching high school for 5 years. And through it all, I've just continued to do this show as just like an ordinary person, as just a guy. And it's stuck very mainly to that original formula that I sort of, you know, wanted it to kind of be back in 2010, which is like, don't do this for profit. That way lies madness and you will never be happy.
Right.
Do the show, to just get out that creative energy. I don't just do free form monologues all the time. The show is very monologue based, but sometimes I'll sit out on the porch with my friends and just talk. Other times I'll go mobile and actually walk around, very much like Frank Nora. I'll be in my car, just like you used to do with Morning Commute.
Right.
And it's one of these things where, even though I would very much like to do a show every week, it just hasn't worked out that way, because sometimes I just, let's face it, it's just not creatively capable of doing something that would be entertaining to anybody. But what I am proud of, even though I haven't been consistent with the show, is the fact that you can look back on 15 years of the show and the archive is up. You can go into the archive and you can hear the chronicle of somebody growing up. It's really fascinating. I started the show when I was, how old am I? You know, I was like, you know, 27 years old. Yeah. And now I'm 42. And it's amazing to like actually sort of, not many people have that. I think like I was going back and kind of refreshing the archive, because to celebrate the 300th episode, I'm going to release the entire archive on my Substack, where you can access it and you can listen to every single show there, because Substack somehow has unlimited audio hosting. I really think that because that's because like most people who post audio there never get it listened to. So But you know, they do have that. You can actually just, you know, put natively the audio in there. So you can actually listen to the whole archive there without it being without having to leave that. But I've also got it up on archive.org, but I've been listening to the old shows, and like, I was talking to my wife the other night. I was like, you know, that's insane to me that like, I just don't think many people have this thing. And that's kind of like, not to get like emotional or sentimental about it, but that's kind of the gift that podcasting has given me, is not money at all, but it's given me like a great audio archive that I've gotten to share with people. And as I listen to the show, and I kind of have on some people, some friends of mine that I just like kind of have talked to either over Zoom or back in the day, you know, like whatever it was, Google Meet or Skype or whatever. They are young people and now they've gotten older. So as I've been kind of going through the show, I've been sending my friends just links to like, remember this from 2011 when we were just like sort of talking like a couple days before Christmas and everything. And it was really cool. So, and you know what I'm talking about, cause you've been doing this since freaking 1999, not this show, you know, Static Radio with Miles.
Right. So, yeah, I wasn't much older than you when I started.
I mean, you know, it's, I mean, you were doing the show before you had children. So it's like children. So you know what it's like to kind of like have that. It's a great gift that you've given yourself and other people as well. So,
yeah, unfortunately, I think I've devolved. You grew up. I think I've devolved.
Well, I have in some ways too. I mean, I used to be full of a lot of ambition. But I mean, one thing, and I've told this story on the show before, it's not really a story, it's just kind of like just a quick anecdote, but when I published my first show back in January of 2010, the very first person who commented on it was Jessica, who's now my wife. You know, and she was living at the time, she was here in town, but she had just moved back from Wisconsin. And so she commented on the show, and the first thing that she ever said, first comment I ever got on the show, was a criticism of she told me that I say, you know, too much. You know, she's like, you know, you say, you say, you know, a lot, you know, so maybe don't say it too much. And you know, and it evolved into something, you know, and all that. So, you know, and I had known Jessica, you know, from college and everything, but we never really, you know, talked that much. But that sort of became like a major thing that,
you know,
you know, it was important. Yeah, there you go. So now I'm hyper conscious of it. So, but
what's the name of your cat? You know? Oh yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. No. Yeah, I got a cat in the back. It's wild.
But I mean, yeah, you're right. It's kind of it's interesting that, you know, the funny thing is, we talked about a little while ago, we talked about touchstones and so forth. You're creating your own. So you just said you and your friends were talking and you sent this over to them because that was a point in time where you all had a shared moment, right?
Right.
And so you're almost creating your own, which maybe that's better than having to think about somebody else's manufactured entertainment.
Yeah.
Just that you said it, that's what I'm thinking. But unfortunately, I don't think everybody who's in the space thinks of it that way, but you're right. Whenever I have stories of my kids when they were little that I can't recall at this point, right? They're not going to be readily available in my memory, but they're recorded and they can be put back in my memory if I wanted to go back and do that. And there's tons of them. I, you know, funny little things that, like, my this one I remember, but I told it more than once, was when my son was little, he talked like Mario. Hey. And that's, I mean, whenever he was talking,
was he intentionally doing a Mario voice?
Or no. He's very, very little. He didn't even probably know what Mario was that point. And so I used to joke. I said, I got, you know, this little Italian man in my house who goes around, you know, asking for things, and, you know, I have to change his diaper, and he's like, ah, yay, me, and it became, yeah, it's a funny, it's a funny thing, but I captured that, so, you know, whenever, many years from now, it's going to be one of those things that can easily
totally go back to. Embarrassing, yeah, totally. I mean, has he gotten married? Is that something that's going to be a wedding for him? Or
I don't know that he is embarrassed by it that much.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think
that's awesome. You have to know that these, you know, yeah, these things come up from time to time.
Right.
And so, you know, and I, tonight, actually, funny thing is, we were talking about my daughter, and my daughter, I had already been doing the show for almost a year. At least six or nine months. I can't remember. But when she was born, and every, like, I would used to not, because it was just me and my wife and now a baby, you know, go hide away when I was talking. And the funny thing was, every time that my daughter would hear Miles's voice, she would poop. And so inevitably, if I was
I listen to your show.
You yeah, know? Exactly. Well, yeah, when she was a baby, and we used to joke about it because, you know, we'd be like, well, I hope, you know, everything works out. We get to talk to Miles here soon because she hasn't pooped in a day or so. And so, I mean, it's just weird.
You know?
And yeah, so we would, I would joke about that, but it was true because a couple, I mean, it only happened, but it was, you know, cause and effect was pretty close, right? So she'd hear him because we used to do the show on a speakerphone.
Yeah.
And that was our mode of, there was no microphones involved, really. It was a speakerphone and a computer that I recorded off of. But the funny thing was, she would poop. And, and so, yeah, it's just weird.
What a bizarre Pavlovian.
Just a weird, a weird thing. but you're right. It is your, I suppose, you know, I don't come from a big family, but my wife's father had three other brothers. Mm-hmm. And so they were, every time they got together, there was constant stories, right, about what happened growing up.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it, since families are generally smaller than that now, you don't always get that. And so we've captured those stories kind of as they happened.
Yeah. And I think that there's like that good thing. It's like, cause obviously like I'm going away this weekend with the big family weekend that my family does every October and all that. And, you know, I'm sure that this weekend will be full of stories, embarrassing stories and kind of like emotional stories. And there's something to be said about that. The fact that like, you know, you preserve those, like just, you know, to be sort of like, you know, drifting off into the air and you're not recording anything or anything like that. But, you know, as opposed to actually like really making an effort to make sure you record things, right? Because people will tell stories differently. They'll either, they may bend the truth or they may omit certain details if you're recording something for an audience to listen to it. And so both, you know, have, so I've told a lot of stories on the show in recent years, you know, that like if I were not recording them, they would have a lot more details, you know, to them. And so, that's one thing about, you know, recording versus actually just telling stories, you know, to not be recorded, is the fact that they're two different things. And there's a lot of value in, you know, and obviously like we live in this age and we've lived in it for years where we feel like everything important, needs to be recorded and it needs to be shared with people. And no doubt podcasting has played like a huge role in that. That's one of the reasons I think people have like 500 shows in a year, you know. but I still think that like it's just this monumental thing that we do need to appreciate in the fact of just like, you know, keeping those like also telling those stories and just like not worrying about like pressing record on your phone or whatever, but just actually sort of like, you know, keeping those things between yourselves without sort of feeling this like immediate reactionary, you know, feeling to preserve them. So, you know,
so back to Midnight Citizen. So you're going to cap number 300. This is going to be the end of the run.
Yeah.
You're going to retire the Midnight Citizen, which to me,
Fantastic
name. I think I've always told you that. probably one of the best names that I've heard, you know, in, you know, a long time.
I don't like it, but I'm glad you do.
Well, then I'll take it. Thank you. Thanks for handing it over. No,
that's fine. No, I mean, you know, it always felt to me like, it's like, if you don't know anything at all about my show, you're listening to it. And it's like, it just sounds vaguely authoritarian. I think it feels like sort of like the neighborhood watch or something. It feels like just some kind of a police state or whatever.
No, I think you say that, but it's the exact opposite for me. It's okay. It's the, you know, one person in the night yelling out, you know, that things are all wrong.
Right.
Wake up. What are you doing? You're letting, you know, the state control you, the midnight citizen. He's the one citizen that, you know, has to stick up for everybody.
And that's sort of also one of the things too, because when you said that just now, it's like, you do sort of get this feeling that it's like a pirate radio, sort of activist, show. And it's not that at all. Like I'm talking about like breakfast cereal and
that's okay.
Very disappointed. But no, I mean, one of the reasons that I'm quitting the show is because of that name, because it's a little misleading. When I did start the show, I did have this great idea to do like a night radio show. And I wanted to like create a name that would sort of convey that and communicate that to people. But as I've gotten older,
I'm not
really a night person anymore. I have a really hard time being awake right now. I'm a morning person. That's the time that when I'm like most creative,
the sunrise citizen.
Yeah. So, if I do a new show, and you know, here's the thing, it's like, I definitely will. Like, I mean, there's no doubt about that, but it will not be so much of a studio based show. It will not be so much like of just coming on at night. It'll just be like that original thing that I was talking about where, just more free flowing. Like the show will just be like, it may be outside, it may be in here, it may be at night, it may be in the day. It's like, the few people who really listen to my show on a consistent basis, you know, when I do live shows at night on Saturdays, I've had people get irritated before, 'cause it's like, I start at 11 Central time and get mad.
I can't stay up. Honestly, I was going to stay up for the last few.
I know that. That's one of the reasons, because nobody apparently seems to be a night person anymore. But it's also the fact that like nobody really wants to listen to my show like live on a Saturday night at midnight. And so I'll sort of like stay up like really late, you know, and kind of do this work on a show that's meant to sort of engage a live audience. And I will 100% expect that I may have two people that chime in to the show. Mm-hmm. Totally prepared to get nobody. But I have had people before who've come in and been really disappointed that I started 11, because they're like, I'm here for midnight. Like, why aren't you starting the show in an hour? You know, and it's like, I can't be up that late. I can't do that. You know, but the show gets going around midnight. That's the thing. It's like, you sort of do it. And like, if I do a live show and people sort of are there and they're engaged, it will go late. I've had some magical experiences doing live shows at midnight. I really have. Like, people tune in, they're sort of in the chat, they're talking to each other while I'm doing the show. And then I'll come on in the comments and sort of like, they'll lead the show in new directions. It really does feel like that original thing that I wanted it to be back in 2010. You know, and I've had some, and I hope to do more of those shows in the future, but I don't want to promise them every week. You know, I can't,
right, yeah.
You know, unless somebody wants to pay me to do it. So,
yeah, but then that ruins it. I mean, that's I've had,
not necessarily. I'm not going to say that money ruins everything, you know.
Well, Miles and I went on Mevio in 2007-ish, which was Adam Curry's podcasting network, we didn't get. I mean, I didn't make any money. Let's be honest, but at least not worth the effort. And it just kind of ruined it for a while. It was like, oh, well, now that I have to do this, I don't want to.
Yeah. this job.
And yeah, so I was thankful whenever that tanked. And then we just got done with it. And I didn't have to move on. It just moved on without, you know, everything just finished. And so,
Other than my college radio experience, I've never tried it. So I'm not going to totally like dismiss it. Like, you know, I would love to have that experience, you know, of being like a broadcaster who actually does have a producer, somebody who sort of like has me on a bit of a leash. I would love to have like an actual sort of audience that I'm held accountable to entertaining. I would like to actually, I mean, you know, because I do, you know, and maybe this is just like how I've become more of a day person over the years. I do enjoy working on deadlines, you know, because that stress does put you on, you know, it gives a certain level of demand for you. Mm-hmm. And I do think that like, if you're gonna take something seriously, you need to sort of have that, right? You know, and even though I've always kind of considered what I do very much a hobby and never making money from it at all, you know, I'm not completely dismissing the idea that this is something that I would like to get paid to do someday. You know, it will probably not happen because there's not really a market in Birmingham, Alabama for late night talk show hosts.
Well, you say that, but here's, I'm going to throw this out. This is, we're spitballing here. We're brainstorming here. Yeah. The funny thing is, I think what you do, what, you know, what we should do as a collective, and this is the royal we, is buy a radio station.
Yeah.
No one wants them. And then basically we revert, we do what we do.
Yeah.
And it can still go out online. There's nothing that says it can't.
Yeah.
But you buy the radio station and you go back to broadcast. And because I think each one of us, and I'm talking about, you know, this is the prior caster aspect of it. Each one of the people who have been part of this have wanted to be involved in media for the fun of it. And if possible, you know, have fun while you're supporting yourself.
Right.
And that could be the answer. Is we've gone, you know, the needle's moved all the way over here, and the thing to do is to jump over there. And you know, because there's more than enough content. If you pull in, you know, Frank and all the other folks and Chad and stuff, we could easily fill the time.
Yeah.
Even if it was on an 8-hour loop that played three times a day.
Right.
You know, and that may be the answer. I don't know.
I have that UHF fantasy. I mean, UHF, that Weird Al
Yankovic. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah,
except it's a television, it's a radio station instead of a
television. Yeah. No, well, I mean, it could be either, because there's no reason why, you know, because Howard Stern used to do his e-show, was just his radio show.
Right.
Yeah. With some cameras that didn't really move that much. From what I recall, they were stationary cameras. They were
totally fixed cameras. And, well, me and Chad are down here in Birmingham. So as I see it, Birmingham is the center of power in the overnight scape.
That's true. The rest of us are spread out.
You guys have all got to come down here. You got to move down here. We'll get a house together and we'll have a radio the basement.
Well, the funny thing is, there was backyard. There was a thing called Hate the Radio, and Frank was almost on it, and I actually talked to those guys as well. I was never almost on it because I wasn't in the neighborhood, because they literally had a house where you'd go to and you'd do your show. But I did talk to them back in the day about it, but they are like, no, we want to have people here. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm not coming there.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting.
They weren't going to fly you in or anything?
No, nobody was flying nobody in those days. This is early times. But
I was doing
well,
technique.
We on the exit ramp at some point, we need to explore this topic more.
Right.
And but honestly, it's weird because you can buy radio time. And actually, I've been on the radio as a podcaster at least twice.
Yeah.
Because somebody has a show that they were paying then to be broadcast.
Okay.
And I was the guest. There's radio stations that literally you pay, broadcasters pay to be on the radio.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's, wow. That's so that's sort of, it's like a radio fantasy camp in kind of a way.
I don't, you know, no, the thing is that just, you know, people, I joked since 2020 with people, if they ask me and I say, if you want to make money in podcasting, sell something to a podcaster.
Yeah. That's absolutely true, isn't it?
Yeah. That's because that's where the end, you know, that's where this is at right now. Yeah. Those are the people making the money.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll get an email probably at least once a month, if not more than that, you know, from somebody who's like, I really enjoyed your show. I especially liked your bit, your take on, you know, so on and so forth. They just had an AI listen to my show. Turned it around on them recently because I've been looking for a job like all summer long. And I sort of like, I looked at their, it's like they were a legit company, you know, mm-hmm. they were just like bullshitting, you know, and just right. throwing out a wide net. And I asked them if they had any openings at the time for an audio editor. And they actually got back to me and they're like, man, that's really great. At this time we have no openings for an audio editor. We're pretty tight staff here. I was surprised that they actually got back to me and like they were actually very honest with me about like how small their operation is, because from the initial email it sounded like they cover, you know, they've done 10,000 podcasts and helped thousands of podcasters reach it broader. Right. And yeah, okay, fine, you know. So yeah, it's you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, that's how you make money almost at anything. It's just, you know, sell something to the, you know, industry that you're in.
Right. Like gold miners, sell them picks and exactly. you'll make more money than the people mining gold.
Exactly. Like that's an old nugget. You know?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Mike, thanks for sitting with me tonight. And yeah. I mean, we were all over the place, but yeah. That's okay.
I think it was pretty focused. I think it was.
You think so?
Yeah. Of the three or four conversations that I think we've had on recording, I think this was probably very focused.
Oh, good.
I was following it. I was making notes in my head.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're you know, an expert in that field for writing, so I'm not. Where's the note cards? That's what I want to know.
No, they're in my head.
Oh, okay. Mental note. I was making mental note cards. They're lined.
I was, yeah.
They're not the blank ones. They got the blue lines and the red line at the top and everything.
Yeah.
But you can check out, well, come Saturday.
Mike, next Saturday.
Midnight Citizen. Yeah, next Saturday, Midnight Citizen finale.
Yeah. And is yet to be named. I'm thinking of naming it after the Breaking Bad finale, which I think was called Felina or something like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But don't call it El Camino.
No, I won't call it El Camino, but I'll probably do some kind of weird, anagram for finale or something.
Oh, there you go. Mike's bonfire.substack.com if you want to listen to the old shows, and we'll see what Mike does next, and hopefully he'll talk to me again. Hopefully this is not the last time chat.
No. Yeah, I'm about to eat dinner. Spoiler alert, that's what I'm going to do next. I'm about to go.
Yeah, he's not going to retire and never do another interview like Greta Garbo or something.
Oh, well,
which is a really old reference.
That would be something. I know exactly that reference. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's what she said. Yeah. So.
But so everybody, take homes from the conversation. Expand your schema. Don't be so narrow. Live in the moment and remember what you did. And maybe you'll have a few nuggets in there that you can pass on after you're gone. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
We'll see you all later. Hold on a second, Mike.